Book session number 10013, reel number 1.
Mr. Alf House, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. House?
I was born on the 3rd of January, 1914, at a place called Howden Street in Stockton-on-Tees, which was then County Durham.
Now, your father had connections with the armed forces. If you could explain, from 1909 he was in the...
1909, as far as I understand, my father was one of the first volunteers in the what they call the Defence Force. And he carried on there until the outbreak of World War One, and he went right through World War One till the cessation of hostilities. And when he came out, he continued his service, which had then become the 5th Battalion DLI, Durham Light Infantry. And he soldiered on, and then until 1937, I think it was, when unfortunately he turned blind, and he had to come. He had to be come out. He had to be discharged himself. In the meantime, by that time I'd become about 20.
Well, we'll stick with that. So, you were very young at the time. Do you have any memories of the First World War and how it affected you and your family?
I can remember. No, not much. I can remember. My mother worked in the fields at the farm, a local farmer. Along with a lot more women, you know, reaping the harvesting, and I can just barely remember if I come home and leave. I'd be about 4 years old then. It sounds fantastic, but I did. I can't remember one vivid memory of coming home on leave and taking me to a football match, the Stockton Football Club play, which was about, by then we'd moved to a place called 59 Wren Street in Oxbridge, which was a district of Stockton. And we lived about 200 yards from Stockton Football Field. I can remember everybody taking me to him and sitting me on his shoulders to watch the football match.
Did you miss him at all at the time, or were you just too young?
I think I was too young, yes, to miss him, yes. And then...
What was your education like after the war you'd start?
After the war?
Or during, if you started?
Well, I'd become, what, if I was 14, 28. I went to South when I was 5. At Oxbridge Lane School, and I went until I was 14. I won a scholarship to go to a higher school, but being the eldest of the 4 in the family, I wasn't allowed to go and take advantage of the scholarship. I had to leave and start work to bring some money into the house, which we badly needed, because they were bad times. And I worked as a butcher boy when I was 14, for about, no longer than 9 months, I think. And then I finished that job, and I took an apprenticeship in a brass foundry. And how I got that apprenticeship was the owner of the brass foundry was a captain in the 5th DLI, Captain Rear. So I got an apprenticeship there. And at the same time, I'd already joined the... I'd been in a boys' brigade.
What have you done in the boys' brigade?
I remember the boys' brigade as a bugler. Bugles, they had a bugle band and drums, and I was a bugler. And when the Terriers went to camp yearly, my father used to take me from being over just a nipper. And the army blood was beginning to mount up my blood, I think. And when I was 14 year old, I joined the Territorial Army myself. And I enjoyed it so much, going to camp and attending drills in the drill hall and doing parades.
If you could tell us a bit more about them. You joined on the 7th of the 1st, 1928. Would that be right?
Yes. I think I was 14. Yes, that would be it, yeah.
And what did you have to take any sort of exam to get in?
No, the Territorial Army, no, you didn't. No, you didn't.
No medical?
Oh, medical, yes. I went to a place called the Armontees, which was just about 4 miles out of Stockton. to the 5th Battalion medical officer. He was a man that passed to a fit or otherwise, and I was passed fit, and I was accepted the 5th Battalion as a bugle boy. And yeah. I did about 4 camps with them before I joined the regular army.
Right. What training did you get in the fifth?
In them days, the bugle section was called the Lewis Gun section of the battalion. It was a machine gun company, the Lewis Gun section. The buglers was the Lewis Gun section, and we were all supposed to be able to handle a Lewis gun in case of emergency, in case of war. And we were trained on that particular weapon.
How often was your training? You went every week, did you?
No. We about 4 times a year. You went on a course, a long weekend course, maybe from. Must have been a long weekend. It was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, you did about 4 hours at the drill hall for Friday, Saturday, Sunday on this long course, and you got a regular army instructor came down from Fenham Barracks, that was the Durham Infantry Depot. And he came down and took an instructor on this weapon. And when you were quite conversant with the weapon, after that it was just a matter of refreshing your memory all the time, you know.
What sort of things did they teach you about the weapon?
How to mount it. All the different parts. Name them all. How to mount it. How to load it. How to fire it. How to aim it. All the, you know, the main things.
Did you get practical experience in firing it?
Yes, Whitburn Camp. That's a rifle range just out of Sunderland. A place called Neesham, that's not far from Darlington. Used to go there and get practice on the actual live ammunition, you know.
Would you fire much, or was it?
No, not a great lot. I can't remember how many rounds we fired. Not only did we fire the Lewis gun, we fired our own 303 Lee Enfield rifle as well. We had to be efficient with one of them, apart from being efficient with the Lewis gun.
What the Lewis gun team? What number were you in it? What was your job in a Lewis gun team?
Well, although we were the Lewis gun section, there would be about 6 teams in that section. It's about 6 Lewis guns, and there was 3 in a team. There's one used to lie by the side of the gun, one holding the gun. How do you hold it now? I like that. That's how he held it, and that was it triggering. And there was a pan magazine on the top, and the number 2, he's the one that loaded the gun. When he was firing, magazine empty, he would shout, and he would whip the empty one up and put a full one on. And it was also he was number 2. Number 1 was the one that was fighting. Number 2 was the one by the side. Number 3 was always lying behind you in case of casualties. If the number 1 got knocked out, number 2 would take his place, and number 3 would take number 2's place. That's the way that was considered of a team.
So you all had to know all.
So I had to know all about it. Yeah.
What about your other training? Would you get that mainly at the drill hall?
It was all at the drill, except for your fortnight camp. You know, when he went to camp for a fortnight every year.
What did you do in the drill hall first?
In the drill hall? Well, being a bugler, we practiced with a band and bugles, combined practice marches. That's about all we did, apart from the odd drill sessions.
Foot drill,
oh yeah, it was all foot drill, yes.
And that's where you were taught the Lee Enfield, was it, as well?
Taught Lee Enfield as well, yes. And then we had all these chaps that came down to instruct. They were all regular soldiers from Fenham Barracks, because Fenham Barracks wasn't far away, just in Newcastle, you know. But apart from that, part of the regular, we had some good, as far as I can remember, we had some damn good instructors, although they were only terriers, or better known as part-time soldiers, were some damn good instructors. A fellow called Jones in particular, I remember, he was a damn good instructor.
Jones?
Sergeant Jones, yes, he was a very good
instructor. What technique did they use? Were they very strict or firm, or how did they behave to you?
Yes, they were pretty strict, because once you're under army law, and the fact that you're only a territorial army soldier, you're as much under military law, and you had to obey them as if you were in the regular army. Because once you stepped in that drill hall, if you create any trouble, an NCO had the powers to have you detained in a military prison, you know, if you caused that much trouble, I mean. And if you could take in front of the CO and have you see what the CO thought about it, and say, have you warned about your future conduct? You know, that kind of thing. Oh, yes, you're under military law all the time.
But were they sympathetic in the way they trained you? Were they
effective? They weren't too harsh, because, I mean, the Territorial Army wasn't like the regular army. I mean, the Territorial Army, you could say, oh, the hell, I'm getting, I'm packing in. You could pack it straight away. You know, if you were that way given, if you were chicken-hearted or something, you know. But not so with the regular army. Thank God, no.
What about the officers? Did you see much of them at the drill hall?
Not a great lot. It was a lovely big drill hall, big building was the 5th Battalion, where there was the private's canteen, the sergeant's mess, officer's mess, and a great big drill hall.
Were you allowed in the private's canteen as a bugler?
Oh, yes, you're classed as a bugler, yes. Anybody from a bugler, even a boy bugler was allowed in. You weren't supposed to drink, of course, but you did. Lots of things you weren't supposed to do. And you know, those were meant to be broken, weren't they?
What kind of men were in the turret? Well, you know, the other ranks and the other bugle boys. What kind of men did you think they were?
Oh, they were a great crowd of lads. They were a mixture of all sorts, you know. Right from bank clerks down to the ordinary common labourer. They were all sorts of decent chaps, oh yes. Smashing them. A good battalion. But you see, the 5th Battalion, it didn't only consist of Stockton. The 5th Battalion, there was five companies in the battalion in them days, all battalion, not just the Durhams, even the regular army. There A Company, B Company, C Company, and D Company, which was a machine gun company. Everybody in that company was a machine gunner. Then you had Headquarter Company.
And you were headquarters, were you?
Headquarter Company consisted of the band, the bugles, the signals, all like the postman and the armourer and the saddler and all the odds and so they were all in Headquarter Company. Now, A Company was Stockton, so was HQ. B Company was Darlington. D Company was Horden. No company shots over there.
C, you missed.
C, A Stockton. B.
Doesn't matter.
I forget where the company from. There was five companies.
What about your fortnightly camps? What were they like?
Well, I think everybody looked forward to going to camp for a fortnight, because it was apart from the easy training. It wasn't a hard fortnight by any means. I kept it. It wasn't a hard fortnight.
What would you do on it? What would you actually do on it?
Well, you went out doing manoeuvres. You know, it taught you to be a soldier under active war conditions, doing manoeuvres, and you went out a couple of nighttime manoeuvres and. You had an imaginary enemy, and sometimes, for instance, I remember once we were in camp, and the camp next to us was the 5th Green Howards, and we did a scheme with them. They were the enemy, you know. It was all that kind of thing. And then during the fortnight, you got your sports days, and your different things happened during the fortnight. It was a great. You sort of look forward to it. Everyone looked forward to it.
You were released from the brass foundry where you were an apprentice.
I made up my mind to join the regular army, and I went to see the boss. It was Captain Rea, and he said, "What is it, Alf?" Well, I said, "Alf, that's what you call it, Alf. We had to call him Sir." I've decided to finish my apprenticeship, so I want to join the regular army. And he just accepted it, you know. No, that's where you wish. That's what, fair enough. He said, "I wish you all the best and good luck to you." And all this being he'd been a wartime soldier himself for the 14-18 war. He'd carried on with the 5th Battalion afterwards. And then my father got on like a bomb. They were great friends. Although I said myself, my father was a very popular man in the battalion. He was. He wasn't one of these hard men. He treated a man as a man, you know. As a man should be treated, didn't bullshit or anything like that. Yes. No, it's not that bad. He was a great. He won the DCM, you know, in the 14-18 war. He was when we used to get correspondence at home. The odd one, Mr. W. Howe, was DCM 59 Wren Street, Stockton. Well, that's it. It was allowed that. I might have a friend in Durham now, Jolly Self. If I ever Jolly House, but DCM at the end, which he's entitled to. It's a proper way.
You were proud of your father then?
I was. Yeah, I was.
Now you went about joining up. Where did you go to sign on to join up?
First of all, I went down to the Bill Hall in Stockton, and the adjutant there was a regular soldier called Goldsmith. And I said I want to resign my service at the Territorial Army. I want to join the regular army. And I always remember me saying, "Well, I'm sorry." He said, "Where do you want to go?" I said, "I want to join the Durham." So he said, "I don't think they're open for recruiting, but I'm making inquiries." And he made inquiries, and I was accepted as a special recruit. A special recruit. That doesn't sound right.
You wouldn't have wanted to join anywhere.
No, I don't think I would have joined any other regiment. No, I was. So I would have waited until they opened again for recruiting. Rather than join another regiment. Heart and soul was in the Durham Light Infantry.
You got a special enlistment, though.
I got a special enlistment, but I can't understand when I was past fitting on that. I had to go. I'd report to recruit officer at Middlesbrough. My documents for me, shilling a day. What you got? Signing on one. You got a shilling a day for signing on, and your rail one. There was two lads there. I can't remember. I asked them whether they were specialists. One was from Hartlepool, Thompson. I called Thompson, and Jimmy. I keep seeing Jimmy. And occasionally, he lives at Blackhall Colliery. Jimmy Williams. He was there. And the three of us left Middlesbrough together to fend for Fenner Barracks.
And that was in January 1932.
That was, 11th of January 1932, yeah.
Now, you went into Fenham Barracks. Which squad were you put into?
Ladysmith squad.
And who was running the squad at that time?
The names of the instructors, you mean?
Well, the main instructors.
We had three, a sergeant, full corporal and a lance corporal. It was Sergeant Raftery, Corporal Rigg, and Lance Corporal Hudson. Now I meet Lance Corporal Hudson every year. He finished up a major. He comes to the reunion. I met him in recently in September. He now lives in Brighton. He comes up every year for the reunion. Freddie, the grand lad.
What was about you? You were in Fenham Barracks. If we run through what it was like in the barracks, what do you remember about conditions in the barracks at that time?
The room barrack rooms. There was a very austere. There wasn't much. A little further, you got an iron bed and a mattress, and plenty of blankets, and you had a locker above your bed, and between the head of your imagine that fight was head of your bed, and you had a locker on the wall above your bed, and there'd be about 30, 36, maybe 40 beds in a room, a big coal fire, and a great big coal box. And everybody had a barrack room job, scrubbing the floor or polishing the windows or blackleading the coal box or blackleading all that same kind of jobs. Yeah, that was when you first went there. You were given that, and by God, if they weren't shining properly or they weren't clear, you were for it.
What about your equipment? What were you issued with, and how were you?
Well, first of all, when you first joined, you were issued with a. What do they call it now? It was like a canvas suit, canvas coat and canvas trousers. That was like you call it, fatigue dress. And a soft cap with a peak on you, a very soft cap. And also, you're also issued with a khaki uniform and a peak cap. And a hard, the proper hard peak cap. And putties. Already putties in them days. Putties, you're like that, and your putties was tied on your trousers, tied around your legs. And when you're on route marches, if you put your putties on too tight, it was murder. And your rifle, of course, and what else? I think that's about all we got. PT kit, vest and shorts, and slippers. You got all that when you went into PT, which was every day. I think that's about all the equipment we've got at the depot. Rifle, of course, bayonet.
Can you remember what the daily routine was during your training with the squad?
Well, they varied. You were up at 6 o'clock, I think the valley was in them days. Everybody just get washed and shaved, because if you weren't on prayer in time, you were for it, and and maybe did a half an hour's PT straight away, then breakfast, back for breakfast.
What would you get for breakfast?
I can't remember. Sausage, a tin tomato or something. Porridge, you got porridge every morning. Mug of tea, maybe a sausage and mash, or sausage and tomato. On occasion, you might get a bit of bacon. But you got bacon every Sunday morning. That was one bright feature about it. Bacon and egg, that was a recognised breakfast every Sunday morning. Well, the farm, no, it wasn't too bad. A good big dinner, you know, and you got light teas, I can't remember what it was. Halfway through the morning, you got cocoa and the biscuit. It was hard as bricks, the biscuits. You take them on an army lad that served. Can you remember the biscuits that we used to get? Them thing. the food was quite good. Quite good.
What would you do after breakfast then?
Well, I think when you went to the dining room here, and you made back to your barrack room, and you sort of you knew what your next parade was, because there was a sort of a program put up on the barrack room wall, and you knew what it was. You had to prepare yourself for it, whatever it was, and you always had to be ready 10 minutes. If the parade was 9 o'clock, you had to be ready by 10 till. You know, it was a recognised thing. Always be ready 5 minutes before the appointed time of parade. Well, we had to be ready 10 minutes.
And what sort of parades would they be for? What would you be doing there? Drilling?
Oh, you got a mixture. It might be weapon training. It could be drill. It could be PT. It could be out in a cross-country run. It could be those that wanted to go in for boxing or fencing. That was after being after being maybe a couple of months. That was. Yeah, and then you could... What else he used to do? Drill, rifle drill, learn how to mount guard, learn how to do sentry guard, and how to, if you were walking down the street in the street in your castle, you were out dressed with your cane and you met an officer, you had to learn how to salute the officer, put them in and salute them, and you know. it was a mixture of all sorts, drill, weapon training, PT, education, you went to school. Oh yes, you went to school. You were expected, after so long, you were expected to at least achieve a second class certificate of education. Their standards, of course. Well, there were only three of us in there. There was 36 in our school. There was three of us managed to get our second class certificates of education at the depot. And if you didn't get it at the depot, you had to continue with your training when you joined the battalion. You had to go to school until you got it. And if you could only get a third, never get it, I think they were used to discharge them. I think if they could only manage a third certificate, no, not likely to become an efficient soldier, were discharged. I think that's what they used to do with them.
How many of these parades for different things would you have in the morning before lunch?
Well, I don't think we know more than that. So you had your breakfast, you had your early morning parade, and breakfast. Well, you might get two parades and a lecture before lunch. There's always lectures coming. You get lectures every day about army life and the rules of the army, military law. You got lectured on all military law, which became. I mean, if you didn't, well, you committed crime. It was their fault because you didn't know any better.
Did they teach you anything about the DLI?
Oh yes, you learned regimental history. Yes, you learned history of regiment.
You say lunch was a stew?
Oh no, did I say stew? No, well, you've got a good stew, you know, like potatoes, carrots, meat, a sweet after it, no soup. That's all you get, a sweet. And then you get your tea, there's nothing more than breakfast time the next day. You don't know supper or anything.
In the afternoon, you'd have more parades?
Yes, it was all parades and lectures, that's all it was. Different kind of parades. And then, as you progressed, I mean, the three NCO, the three instructors, would keep an eye on you. I suppose they would make reports, and there was, I think, two lads, I think, were sent home. You know, they were a bit thick in the nut. Just weren't taking it in and didn't know the left leg from the right leg. no matter how you how often they were on Friday, made no difference. Of course, some of them, you know, they joined, they realised and made the mistakes. They used to work the tickets, do all sorts just to get out.
What sort of things? Or what can you remember any in particular?
Well, it's they just could grasp things. I can't remember, and get themselves into trouble, so that they would, you know, get CB regularly, and so that the character was near. The characters of these were nil, and let's just discharge them, and not like to become an efficient soldier.
After the day's training, were you allowed out before?
Oh yes, allowed out. Yeah, every Monday night after so long. I think it was 6 weeks. In them days, that Newcastle Hippodrome was going, and there was all the great turns of the day. Them, the Gracie Fields, you'll have heard about, and that's the first thing that comes to mind. All the leading turns of the country used to come to Newcastle Hippodrome, and so many got free tickets every Monday night. I mean, if you went like this Monday night, you wouldn't go next Monday. You got over twice a month. That was great.
You got free tickets.
Got free ticket, yes. But we're always short of money. I mean, you pay was a shilling a day. That was £7 a week. Well, you got your first thing that was ballot damages were kept off that. And you don't ask where the ballot damages were for. I think you fucking know you don't ask. So you might draw about £6, 30 pence these days. First, you had to go straight across the canteen. You might want to bump a meppo, you might have some blanco for your equipment, you might want some shoe polish for your boots, and all that. You made sure you had that. And you left with maybe 2 or 3 shillings. That'll last you from Friday to Friday. So you maybe get out one night a week in Newcastle. You like to drink, you might. And that was it for the rest of the week.
Did you drink at the time? Would you go for a
No, I don't think. I'm never much of a drink in my young days. I've made up for it since then. No, I wasn't much of a drinker then. You couldn't afford it. That was as simple as that. I mean, when you get £7 a day, 35 pence a week, couldn't that now? What could he do with that? No, he couldn't afford it. Maybe would have gone for a drink if I had the money in my pocket, but it didn't.
You say you went out on Mondays. You get this pass to the Hippodrome.
Yeah, yeah.
But was that the only night you were allowed out?
Allowed out every night.
What would you do then if you didn't have the money to spend? Would you just go for a walk or?
Well, if you went out. What would you do? You didn't go every night because, although you were allowed out every night, you weren't expected because you had your kit to keep running, and your barrack room jobs to do on the night time. You could because your barrack room task what you had. You had to do that at night time because you didn't have time to do it during the day. You can't do your parades and your meals and one thing and another. No, you didn't go out. Although you were allowed out, you didn't go out every night.
Did you have very many regular kit inspections?
Oh,
what
yes.
I think they called Shiner Parade.
Oh, well, Shiner Parade wasn't. That was a different thing. Shiner Parade was. When you got your boots issued, they were thicker grease, and you had to get that. They had to be shiner, like so you could see yourself through them. Your bayonet was black. That had to be highly polished. You had to polish the. So all your equipment, your web equipment, all little brass things and all, that had to be in a belt, that ought to be. Then your kit inspection, right? They were every month.
What actually happened on these Shiner parades?
You had to be there. Everybody had a job. Everybody had to look at do their own kits. And the Lance Corporal. He used to live in the barrack room with you, but the corporal didn't. He had a bunk of his own, and the sergeant, he was in married quarters. They were invariably always married men, lived in the married quarters. He only saw them during the daytime. He didn't. The other kid, they would pop over at night to see if you were all right, you know. But the Lance Corporal was there, responsible to watch you, to supervise all your shining parade and see everyone. He said, "Now, are you getting on with that job there now, private so and so? Come on. I want to see that when you finish that kind of business, you know."
Would they pick on one thing at an evening, or, you know, would they say, right, get boots tonight?
Yes, maybe, yes, boots tonight, but bayonets, Tuesday night, and what else? Scabbards, have you been? That's another night, that kind of thing. Rifle, another night.